start. I would like to call the June 12th, 2020 telephonic meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry to order at 9:01 a.m. Ms. Holland, could you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Kasagis?
Here.
Dr. Jones?
Dr. Jones?
Here.
Dr. Moffitt?
Here.
Dr. Hunter? Dr. Hunter?
Noted absent.
Noted absent. Dr. Mastordis?
Here.
I do want to let you know that the two public member positions are vacant. Margaret Whalen?
Present.
Paula Hollins is here. Mona Baskin?
Present.
Dr. Hunter?
Present.
Okay.
I was wondering if that last ding was Dr. Hunter coming on. Okay. Now we'll move on to President's Report. And I actually have a few things to say today. We'll start off with the Statement of Purpose. A license to practice optometry in this state is a privilege granted by the Arizona Legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and, in general, assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrist and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. Effective January 1st, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. I would also like to go over, since this is a telephonic meeting and we're not together, just some protocols that we try to use for those people that are guests of the meeting, and to remind the board members that when board members speak, please speak one at a time and state your name before you speak. Members of the public who are in attendance will have a chance to speak and answer questions from the board when called upon. When you are called upon, please use your initials only when introducing yourself. As an example, I'd be patient JC. There will be a summary of each complaint followed by a statement from the patient, if the patient is present and wants to speak, and questions from the board. If the doctor is present on the call, they will be permitted to speak and answer questions as well. If needed, patient rebuttal will be heard prior to board beginning discussion and eventual action on the complaint. Once we're in a discussion, both the patient and doctor will ask to not speak unless they're called upon. And this is just to keep some semblance of order during a telephonic meeting, because sometimes it can get out of order. So if we could follow that protocol, hopefully we'll get it done quickly. And one more thing, prior to starting the next section of the meeting, while we're still in the President's Report, I'd like to say a few words, since this is my last meeting as a board president. And if I try and say something and call to the public, Ms. Baskin will probably yell at me because I'm not the public. So I just want to say it's been an honor and a privilege to serve on the board and to serve as president. I've learned a lot in my time here. I've learned too much about the legislative process and how confusing and confounding it can be. While it helps us as a board, it also limits our responses at times. But that's part of the dichotomy of being a legislative profession. I've learned a lot of things I should do in my office from things that people do, and I've learned a lot of things I shouldn't do in my office. So it's been a great learning experience, and I'm hopeful that the existing board members get as much knowledge and satisfaction as I had in the process. And I'd like to thank the staff for their assistance and support, Ms. Hollins for her behind-the-scenes work, and Ms. Whalen for being our voice to the public and keeping us on track. And to Ms. Baskin for keeping us in line, judicially, let's say, judicially and procedurally. And just when you guys get us trained, it's time for us to leave. So thank you all. So now we'll move on to item D, review discussion and possible action on investigative review and complaint. Ms. Whalen, do you know if either of the doctors or complainants are here?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Are on the call?
I believe that Dr. Packer is present and his complainant is present as well. I believe the complainant is present for Dr. Geiler, but I believe Dr. Todd Geiler had another commitment, so he may not be on the line.
Okay. Since both of them have someone here, we'll just go according to the agenda, and we'll go number one first. And so this is Bradley Packer, OD, IR number 202019. Dr. Moffitt, could you review this, please?
Absolutely. This is Dr. Moffitt. Sorry, I'm pulling up his complaint here real quick. So patient SC scheduled an eye exam, glasses, and eye exam with Dr. Packer on March 6th, 2020. At the check-in, she was queried by the technician, at which time migraine headaches were mentioned, and eye exam including refraction ensued with no dilation performed. Patient at the conclusion of the exam was told that she would need to return for a vision exam to obtain the updated glasses prescription. At that point, she left, I think, confused, but returned after that to obtain a copy of her medical records. She was given a copy of her initial exam, but not the medical history questionnaire, which she was concerned about. And then she was also provided with some other patient records as well at that visit. That's a summary of what occurred.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Now, if the patient is present, if you could introduce yourself and make a statement.
Yes, I'm the patient, Sherry Calvert. That was pretty
much... Initials, please.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
SC.
It's okay.
I had gone into the office and had made an appointment to be seen for my initial eye exam through my insurance, VSP. And when I arrived to the office for that appointment, I was asked for my medical insurance card, which I thought was weird, and because I had vision insurance. And then I was called back by the technician, which his name was John, and he took me back and was doing this test with my eyes flipping, you know, like lenses. Do you see better here, worse here, and stuff like that. And I thought that was kind of weird. And then the doctor came in and he put his little lens thing up to my eye and just looked into my eye like a pressure check or whatever, and that was it. And then I was told I had to come back in a couple weeks that I could order my glasses. And I thought it was really odd because the doctor himself never did an eye exam. So, and in speaking with the technician himself, he was asking me a bunch of questions, you know, about my medical history and whatnot. And he had asked me if, you know, I have headaches and, you know, stuff like that and what my medical history was. I said, yes, I have headaches. I have fibromyalgia and, you know, stuff like that. I'm going through all that, telling him that that was part of my disability. Well, lo and behold, I find out they billed my medical insurance for a migraine appointment, treatment of migraines. Well, I see a neurologist for my migraine specifically, so I wouldn't be going to an optometrist for my migraines. And I'm in the medical field, so I know how this all goes. and I was very upset about it. I said, look, I said, you guys are trying to bill my insurance for something that was not done, nor was I seen for. I came in for my eye exam, and that's what I expected to get, and I expected to get a pair of glasses out of it. So I said, now I'm expected to pay you this amount of money, and I said, and I am not going to pay that because these services were not done. If this is not what I requested. I asked them for a copy of my medical history. They gave me everything but what I filled out for what I was there, which had my patient registration, you know, my name, address, my allergies, my medical history itself, and my signature at the bottom. And they told me that they don't keep that on file. That is incorrect because I am in the medical field, and we have to keep that for 7 years if you are a current patient. So they refused to give me that because nowhere on that does it say I'm there for migraine. I was there for my eye exam. So I'm very upset about this, that I now have this bill and I can't utilize my eye exam somewhere else.
Okay, thank you very much. Before we move on, I mean, we'll have a chance to ask questions later, but does anyone have any questions right now?
This is Dr. Moffitt. I had a quick question.
Okay.
Just to be clear, patient SC, you didn't complain about having headaches. This was only something that was brought up during the health history, if I understand you correctly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Dr. Packer, are you present?
Yes.
Would you like to say a few words?
Sure. So can you guys all hear me okay?
I can.
I've got you on speakerphone. Okay, great.
Excuse me, Dr. Packer. This is Margaret Whalen. You're represented by counsel. Is your counsel present?
Cynthia, are you here?
Cynthia Patain.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I'm here.
For the record, thank you so much, Ms. Patain.
I wasn't sure how the telephonic process would work, but I'm also prepared to make comments if that's permitted.
As soon as the doctor's done,
okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay.
Okay, so this is Dr. Packer. So when the patient scheduled her appointment, it was understood by our staff member that she was wanting a medical eye exam. I'm not sure exactly what words she used to ask for that, but that's what she was scheduled for. And so when she arrived, we asked her, the technician asked her medical history, and we did a medical eye exam. She has fibromyalgia. She's got headaches. We did a medical eye exam to rule out, complications that can be associated with that, with the eye. We can't bill for a vision exam and a medical exam the same day, so she made it clear that she wanted the glasses at some point in there, so we scheduled her for a vision exam on a different day. As far as giving her the printout from another patient, I assume that was carelessness, as it was on the printer and it was accidentally given to her. That's been addressed, and that's an unfortunate mistake. But it appears that the whole complaint centers around a miscommunication, communication error. We understood that she wanted the medical eye exam and proceeded down that route, and she felt that she thought she was clear about asking for a vision exam under her VSP, where we are not, it's a well check. The vision exam is a well check, and we don't address the medical issues, which is, anyway. So we both proceeded down different paths in our minds, and in the end, she didn't get what she wanted. We were able to, we did a refraction. I like to do a refraction on all new patients so that I just have a baseline for my knowledge. And so we were able to, from that refraction, we were able to generate a prescription after the fact. And I sent that into the board so that you guys could give that to her. I'm sad that she is so disappointed with the visit, but I feel like we met the standard of care, and it was simply a communication error, and I would respectfully request that the complaint be dismissed. If you have any other questions for me.
I'm sure we will. I don't
okay, great.
In time, but okay, if counsel would like to make a statement.
Yes, thank you, Doctor. Good morning, everyone. I don't have a great deal to add to what Dr. Packer just said, other than it doesn't seem that there was a violation of the Optometric Practice Act here. It really just seems that it boils down to miscommunication, and it's clear that the patient is very frustrated, but there was no negligence here. It was just a miscommunication, and the staff scheduling it for the health or medical exam, which was performed. There was a report of headaches to the doctor, as far as the records can show, and he ruled out any cause of that as far as from being from the eye in the exam. So it's clear that that was performed, and that's why it was billed as such. And the patient is obviously very frustrated, and she was hoping she was getting the vision exam. And Dr. Packer, once he got the complaint and realized it was just two different paths that they were taking, apparently, but he didn't realize that until he got the complaint. And once he did, he tried to do what he could by generating a prescription from the exam, because there was a refraction, and that was sent to the board to hopefully pass along to the patient so that she could get what she needed. And at the end of the day, there was no negligence, and this complaint really should be dismissed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, would the patient like to say anything in rebuttal before we start our discussion?
Yes, it would, patient, if you... When I went in and filled out my patient registration, I specifically put on there that I wanted an eye exam, not migraine. It was one of their questions on the form, yes, and they discussed it with me, yes. Me not having any knowledge of what their procedures are in eye exam, I thought nothing about their technician doing his eye exam, not Dr. Packard. So I feel that it's fair that they take care of it.
Thank you. Okay, I would like to begin discussion on this. And while we have discussion, if anyone has questions for the doctor or the patient, they can address them. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
I'll ask it. This is Dr. Moffitt. I'll ask a question of Dr. Packer. So, Dr. Packer, sure. Do you frequently differentiate, based on your schedule, a medical eye exam from a vision exam? When patients are being scheduled, you ask them?
Yes, always.
Which of those they're presenting for?
Yes, and they're scheduled under different appointment types.
Okay, and I can understand that. This is Dr. Krasagas. I can understand that only because, especially if someone calls up and they've got flashes and floaters, you're going to schedule it differently than I want an eye exam. However, I know that there are times in my office where my staff will come back and say to me, well, I don't know if this is vision or medical because they got this, and this. And so sometimes the doctor has to make the decision whether it's a medical or a vision exam. And, so the fact that it was scheduled that way, That's not the patient's fault. The patient was coming in for an eye exam. And so, I mean, I see a communication problem, but I also see a problem with the way it was done, because it could have always been changed at the time. I mean, and I don't know if the other doctors have that happen too, but sometimes you don't know what the patient's coming in for. It might be the vision that's causing the headaches, for all we know. But that was something that that I was also going to ask about. And as far as the going through this, so she came in with headaches. She didn't want to be dilated, so she wasn't dilated. But she was billed for a 99204 without a dilation. Do you commonly not dilate the medical exam?
If patient defers dilation, then routinely we dilate on a comprehensive medical exam as well as a comprehensive vision exam. I assume you're asking me, President. And so, yeah, we typically dilate unless the patient declines or defers dilation. But I don't know that, as far as I know, the billing requirement doesn't specify with dilation or without dilation.
Okay. Anyone else have any other questions? Okay, I'll continue. If a refraction was done and the patient was asked for a prescription but wasn't given one, but she got one when she filed a complaint, how does that work?
So this is kind of a weird thing that we do, just because we don't want to have the question of, well, how come they can't see well? Is it just because they need an updated glasses? It just answers a question for me so that I'm more comfortable at the end of the exam. So we do a refraction just to see where they're at, to find out their best corrected vision. And then at the end, if the patient says, no, I would really want a glasses prescription, then we can convert that to a glasses prescription and bill the refraction fee. If it's a medical exam, if it's a vision exam, then that's included. But if it's a medical eye exam, then the refraction's not included. And so then if they ask for that refraction, or for the, not, the refraction does not necessarily always exactly mean a prescription. Those are different things. The refraction is a test. We only bill for that if the patient asks for the prescription.
So then,
did that answer your question?
Yes, it does. But then theoretically, she could have gotten that prescription that day if she had paid you the $25 refraction fee.
Correct.
On top of what she was billed for the medical exam.
Correct, yeah, and we do that a lot.
I know, but you can understand my point. When someone comes in for what they thought was an eye exam on VSP with a $10 copay, and they come out with a $9 bill. With potentially a $25 additional refraction fee, which she didn't get charged probably because there was a complaint. It's a miscommunication, but it's also, does this happen often?
No, I mean, it happens sometimes, and often we're able to figure it out before we get done with the exam. And like you said, we can change routes in the middle of the exam, but I'm not sure what happened at the end of the exam, but I wasn't part of the discussion at the end of the exam as she was leaving, so I'm not sure how much of the question was brought up then. But sometimes we have been able to just change that and say, okay, well, you were under the impression that we were doing a vision exam, then we can kind of change tactics here and bill it differently. I'm not sure why that didn't happen that day. It maybe wasn't clear before she left. I'm not sure.
Okay. Any other questions?
This is Dr. Jones. I agree with a lot of what you said, Dr. Chrysaugus. And I just want to say this to the patient. You know, we do take, at our practice, we take medical insurance and we take vision insurance. And, you know, you really just need to communicate. Like, if the person's coming in for a red eye or, like you said, flashes and floaters, it's medical. And if it's a headache, to me, you kind of have to do the refraction part of it to know if that's what's causing the headache. So, I think maybe he needs to kind of look and just make sure he's communicating either at the front or in his exam what's going on. Thanks.
This is Dr. Moffitt. Are we open for discussion yet, or are we just asking questions of the patient and the doctor?
We can discuss. We're asking questions as part of our discussion.
Okay.
But before discussion, I have a couple record-keeping questions.
Okay. Have at them.
And those are just about, you know, on the record, the exam, the vitreous is within normal limits with an undilated pupil. The diagnosis is a PVD-OU.
Mm-hmm.
I also noticed that Dr. Morgan's name is on the ICFA form and not Dr. Packer's. And I don't know if that is an error that just happened this time or what's going on there, but that's not something that is usual and customary, we'll put it that way. Can you answer either of those questions?
Those are good questions. Tell me where you saw Dr. Morgan's name.
I'll go to the HCFA forum. The HCFA forum for Aetna has Gary Morgan's name as the referring doctor, and also at the bottom, the signature of the physician is says Dr. Gary Morgan.
There are some glitches in our system that we have dealt with. When Dr. Morgan was added on, somehow some of his, if it was scheduled with him at one point and then it was changed and scheduled with me, still the computer will sometimes put that, and we usually catch that and we can manually fix that, but occasionally that slips by and does not get fixed. But that is not a common error. That is almost always caught, so I'm not sure why it snuck through this time. I didn't even see that as I was reviewing the records. But the HCFA form, I'm not sure. I don't think I've seen that.
Okay.
I have something to say as the patient.
Okay.
My appointment was never scheduled with a Dr. Morgan. It was always Packard.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Moffitt, did you have a question or discussion?
I had some items I thought warranted discussion. So I guess I'll ask one last question of patient SC. At the time of checkout, did you request a copy of Glass's prescription?
Yes, I did.
And was it explained to you at that time that you could have your prescription, but you would have to pay for it because it wasn't covered under your medical insurance, or you could return and have a vision exam with your vision provider?
No, I was told that I had to come back in 3 weeks to get the prescription and pick out glasses, and that was by John.
Okay. So, I guess I'll open up with my impression and my thoughts when reviewing this record. This is Dr. Moffitt still. One comment that I will make is that I do believe this looks a little bit manipulative and deceitful towards the patient, and I'll say why. I understand, as everybody here does, I think, maybe with the exception of the patient, that there are medical providers and then there are vision providers. However, that's an insurance distinction. But when we see a patient who presents with potentially multiple complaints, then we have to differentiate which insurance we're going to bill.
Hey, listen.
And
I see it did work. Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
I'm not hearing anything. I hear you now.
I'm sorry. I heard a voice break in.
Hello?
Yeah.
Is it me? Hello?
Yeah, I'm hearing another voice. I'm sorry.
I hear something. I hear something like a party line.
Yes. So my point is that this is something that sometimes the doctor has to differentiate based on the presenting comments of the patient and why they're really in the office. And if someone presents for glasses, but there is a medical concern that is brought up at the time when discussing with the patient, then that also has to be explained that you are pursuing that concern and that your exam needs to either rule in or rule out other medical conditions that may exist in the eye that could be related to whatever your concerns are. And I have to say that even in the case of headaches, that glasses are a component of that. You may have migraines or headaches that are worsened as a result of a poor prescription. And so it's prudent in this case to do a refraction, which was done. However, it could have been released to the patient at that visit. And if during during the patient's presentation or chief complaint, she was only questioned about a history of potential medical concerns, and she mentioned that she gets headaches, as almost all people do. If that was then entered as a chief complaint for presentation of the exam, and I suspect that that is what happened here, based on what the patient has said and my impression of what took place. And so I suspect that this is almost contrived. I hate to say that, but that's sort of how it looks to me. My other concerns, Dr. Packer billed a 99204, an E&M level 4 new patient exam, which is a high level of bill for medical reasons. And in doing so, you have to meet very strict criteria, Dr. Packer, including an extensive HPI. So when you have chief complaint listed, but then it just says headaches, and there are no other qualifying comments about the headaches with the exception of an aura is present, you have to have four comments in the HPI there, maybe the length of the headache, where in the head it occurs, when did this start, what do you take for relief. There are no questions regarding the headache. When you do your review of systems, you have to have 10 systems listed. You have five here, one of which is just other. So you have general, skin, eyes, neuro, other listed. So you fail to meet the criteria, not just on the HPI, but also the review of systems. And then you're supposed to have a detailed physical exam, including a dilation, unless it is documented that it is otherwise contraindicated. So there is no documentation supporting that. In addition, the decision making has to be moderately complex to bill a 99204. In this case, you wrote patient already sees a neurologist. You didn't even discuss glasses prescription as maybe this might be something that would help. And although in your defense you wrote that with a headache you have to rule out potential papilledema or giant cell arteritis, which I found to be a little bit random, you don't have any follow-up testing. There's nothing to support those two diagnoses that you list there. So I find the billing aggressive and doesn't meet the criteria. To me, this does look like this was deliberately billed medical with a push to make the patient present for a vision exam after the fact so that you could bill both insurance plans. That's my impression of how this looks. So at a minimum, I would say that, and I'm just putting out my opinion here for the rest of the board members, but at a minimum right now, I think at least a letter of concern documenting this potentially deceitful behavior, which, you know, maybe you just really failed to communicate with the patient, but that should also be a lesson to you that you're not communicating the differences in insurance and how this works and what you're allowed to do and not allowed to do at any potential visit if you have to bill one insurance plan or the other. And I think at least this poor example of exam and billing should be reported to the insurance company. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments as part of discussion? Okay. But that was very concise, Dr. Moffitt. I was approaching some of those things with my comment about the 99204. And no, you don't have to dilate in a 202 or a 204, but it's suggested that it may or may not include dilation, but without a dilation, I'd at least gone down to a 202. But that's my opinion. The where we go from here is we need to discuss whether we go forward with dismissal, letter of concern, or any other disciplinary action. You heard a possible suggestion. We can either discuss more or someone can make a motion where we go. Ms. Whalen, if you could give the board members, because we do have some new board members here, our options as far as we know, obviously, a letter of concern is not disciplinary, but it does hold some weight. And where we go from there?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. President. Under ARS 327744, the board does have the authority to issue a letter of concern, which is a non-disciplinary action. That can be for any behavior that the board feels is questionable or needs improvement but doesn't rise to the level of disciplinary action. You can issue that as well as a non-disciplinary order for continuing education in a specific area if you feel that the licensee would benefit from some kind of non-disciplinary order for continuing education. You can issue the letter of concern and the order, or you can issue either one by itself. If the board feels that the allegations or the facts as they've been explained today or discussed do rise to the level of disciplinary action and they're pretty solid, the board can offer a consent agreement to the doctor, which is a disciplinary action. That is the only disciplinary action that the board could issue today without a hearing. And what that means is that the doctor basically consents or admits that the facts and the evidence presented were true and they do support the allegations, and it's an action that the doctor is disciplined. If the board feels like they may want to take disciplinary action for any of the issues, whether it's the record keeping, it's the type of exams. I mean, we don't regulate practice management, so the board would need to be a little cautious, specifically what they think they want to discipline for. If there's fraudulent billing, the board can certainly move the complaint to informal interview and ask that the doctor appear, and the doctor may be represented by counsel at that time. It's a little more formalized. The name is a little bit misleading. And at that time, the board could issue a disciplinary action. They could still dismiss, and they can still issue a letter of concern as well at an informal interview, but then the board would have it open to issue any kind of order requiring a term of probation. They can require continuing education. They can require a records review with a monitor. Whatever the board feels would benefit the licensee so that there's no issues in the future.
Margaret, this is Dr. Moffitt. Can I ask for a clarification on one of those?
Yes.
Options. So can the board issue a letter of concern but also issue an order for continuing education?
Yes.
Yes.
And both of those would be I'm sorry, Dr. Kasagas. Both of those would be non-disciplinary?
No, I don't.
The only time the continuing education order would be disciplinary, Dr. Moffitt, is if it was part of a disciplinary order itself.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, if I can add a few things. Thank you, Margaret. So we can do the things we discussed today. The only thing you could do today that's disciplinary that doesn't require an informal hearing or interview would be the consent agreement. If it is to go, if someone feels that this should go to an informal interview, we would, you know, need to get more records and everything else. I mean, the other thing I was thinking too was that she wasn't giving the medical history because they told her they put that into the system and then destroy it. Well, they put him into the system, so it's scanned. And obviously, that's something she wanted because she wanted to show that she didn't ask. Headaches wasn't her primary reason for being there. She says that it probably says, I'm here for an eye exam. That wasn't provided back to her, where it's probably in the system somewhere. It just wasn't copied. And I mean, because if they do it and then they don't make copies of it, why take it? So those are the kind of things that we would ask for in an informal interview if we choose to go that route. So, I'm just giving new board members options as to what we can do.
Dr. Kasagas, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin, Assistant Attorney General. If the board wishes additional information, such as the intake documents, the documentation that the patient filled out, and any disclosure forms that the doctor provided her, we would need to obtain those prior to going to the informal interview so that the board can go ahead and review all that documentation. And at that time, the board would make findings of facts and conclusions of law to be included in your informal notice to the doctor. So just as a point of clarification on that option.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
That we send a letter of concern, as there is reasonable basis to presume deceitful practice here and overbilling of insurance by forcing the patient to return for a second visit for something that was requested at the first visit. I believe that this is potentially obtaining a fee or compensation by fraud or misrepresentation. I would like to mandate continuing education with regard to coding and billing, and I believe that we should report our findings to the insurance company and allow them to pursue it if they would wish to do so.
Dr. Moffitt, this is Margaret Whalen. How many hours of continuing education would you request in the coding and billing?
I would say 5 hours.
Thank you.
In billing and coding.
In billing and coding, yes.
I mean, we have to specify, and you said that, but I want to make sure it's specified that it's for billing and coding and how to go about that. The
And this is Dr. Kasagas, members of the board, Dr. Moffitt, this is Mona Baskin. The length of time that Dr. Packard would have to complete the billing and coding course?
I would say a year.
Months?
6 months to a year is fine with me. 6 months.
Oh.
Or we could say prior to his next renewal, as long as it's not 2 weeks from now or a month from now. I mean, I'm just throwing a name out there.
And
Dr. Packer, when is your birthday?
In September.
Okay, we won't do that then. Thank you.
And Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, Dr. Kasagas, this is Mona Baskin. As far as the letter of concern, we would need to relate it to what your rules require and what your statutes require. So if we could have a more. Yes, can you hear me?
Right. Yes.
Yes.
But I was going to say, I would going down those lines, I think it would have to do with record keeping, which is R-421-305A-13. And also informing a patient of the fee before
That's
the treatment,
correct.
Which is R-421-303B. And all that means is that everything might have been right, but if the patient knew this was going to happen before it happened, like I'm going to charge you $265 for this today, knowing you have a high deductible plan and you're going to pay $139 of that, she might have said, no. I'll go somewhere else and get my VSP exam. So, you know, informing the patient of fees before treatment is also one of the rules.
Okay. This is Mona Baskin again, then. Yes, then if we could have the maker of the motion clarify that, and then we'll see if we have a second.
Sure. And, Mona, I did reference ARS 32-1743, obtaining a fee or compensation by fraud or misrepresentation. So I quoted that in my original motion.
Okay, I apologize. I did not.
Although I think Dr. Kasagas makes excellent suggestions, yeah.
Okay, all right. So it would be those three citations. All right, thank you. I was having some static on my line, so I did not hear that, Dr. Moffitt. Thank you for that clarification.
Mm-hmm. This is Dr. Jones. I second the motion.
Could we hear the motion, Margaret, please?
Yes, just one moment, please.
You can't keep up?
I am there, thank you. Okay, Dr. Moffitt moved to issue a letter of concern pursuant to 32-1744E for deceitful practice and overall billing by to the patient, and forcing the patient to return to possibly collect an additional fee. In addition, pursuant to 32-1744-D4, issue an order, a non-disciplinary order for 5 hours of continuing education in coding and billing to be completed within 6 months from the signed date of the order. As the doctor failed to properly maintain records and billing pursuant to R-421-305-A-13 and disclose fees to the patient prior to treatment pursuant to R-421-303-B.
Margaret, did you make mention in there of the of reporting our findings to the insurance company?
Oh, excuse me, I did not. Let's see, where do I want to put that? Ms. Baskin, this is Margaret Whalen. Can I just add that at the end of the motion that findings will be reported? Or is that part of the letter of concern?
That would not be part of the letter of concern. And may I have a moment, please, just to consult your statutes?
Thank you.
But that was going to be my question under discussion is, can we do that? I mean, I don't see why we can't, but Mona's going to find out if we can, I'm sure.
We may need to go into executive session for legal advice.
Okay. I'd like to, how do we do that on a telephonic call? How do we know people get off the phone?
Mr. President, members of the board, this is Margaret Whalen. I'm going to have you all hang on the line, and I am going to, I'm not sure if you can hang. I was going to say I have another phone that I can call the board members to facilitate the executive session. It's just that you're all probably on the number that you want to be called on. Is that correct?
I am not. This is Dr. Moffitt.
I am.
I am. Dr. Hunter is.
Okay.
I am.
Can you
I am, Dr. Mess.
For just a quick moment, I'm going to do a quick Google Meet. Can you hold for just a moment, please?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for waiting. This is Margaret Whalen. Members of the board, if you could disconnect from this call, I've sent an email invitation for the other conference call for executive session and Ms. Baskin as well. Any members of the public or attorneys or anybody else present, you're welcome to just hang on the line. We will dial back into this number and rejoin the meeting in just a moment.
Okay,
thank you.
Margaret, give me one extra minute, please. Thank you.
Yeah, that's fine.